Yep, decisions. You got a whole hell of a lot of them to make these days, huh? And to do that, you got to know what you're talking about. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we have a packed show today, so I'm going to run through this real quick. At the back end of the show, we're going to be hearing another little piece from Bob Avakian that's taken from his speech, "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America." And this is an extremely important thing in the context of what's going on today, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Before that, we'll be talking with Anne Wright, former U.S. ambassador, basically worked for the State Department for a while and then found out that, she was doing something wrong in the world. And so she decided to stand up and change all that. And we'll be talking with Anne about the upcoming, the new Freedom Flotilla that's being launched this summer to take people, a crew of people, to Gaza. All right. And we'll be talking about that very soon at the second part of the show. But opening the show up, I'm very pleased to let you know that we will be talking with, or we have been talking with, Dr. Asad Abu Shark. And Dr. Asad Abu Shark is, we'll be talking with him direct from Gaza. We did talk with him direct from Gaza. He's a spokesperson for the Great March of Return. And we talked to him, as he put it, from inside the U.S.-Israeli prison that is Gaza these days. And this interview was recorded earlier under very difficult conditions. So without any further ado, let's jump right into it. On Friday, March 30th, Israeli forces opened fire on thousands of unarmed Palestinians at a nonviolent protest along Gaza's border with Israel. 15 protesters were killed by Israeli troops. Over 1,400 were injured by bullets, tank rounds, rubber bullets, and tear gas. On Saturday, March 31st, 49 more unarmed demonstrators were wounded by Israeli gunfire. And a week later, thousands of people were protesting, again demanding their right to return to lands that had been stolen from the Palestinian people. Israel answered with vicious gunfire, and 10 more people were killed by the Israeli army and 1,000 wounded. The toll of 30 killed and 2,500 wounded and injured. And still, the Palestinian people will not back down. In the face of all this, they demand the right to return to the land that had been stolen from them. The plan is to have a series of marches culminating in a planned million-strong march in mid-May to correspond with the 70th anniversary of the establishment of the Israeli settler regime, the opening of the new U.S. embassy in Jerusalem, and Nakba Day, the day that marks the theft of Palestine from the Palestinian people. Joining us to talk about all this is Asad Abu Shark, a spokesperson and member of the organizing committee of the protest known as the Great March of Return. Asad, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about the Great March of Return. You're involved in that, as I was saying. What exactly is the Great March of Return?
You know, this Great March of Return is organized by the Palestinian people, refugees, committees, university professors, trade unions, workers, academics, all sectors of the Palestinian people, including schools, women's organizations, everybody in Palestine. They organize this great march of return, as the name may suggest, to return to the lands and properties from which they were evicted and uprooted by the Zionist gangs in 1948. They have been dreaming and wishing to return to these lands and properties ever since. Let me remind the whole world that the United Nations in 1948 adopted a resolution number 194, which calls for the return of all refugees who were driven out by the force of arms by the Zionist gangs. Yet Israel never implemented such resolution, and Israel ignored totally such a resolution, and it fell on deaf ear. The Palestinian people have been yearning and longing for return ever since that time. This is why they are asking the international community, the peoples of the world, the democracies of the world, the parliamentarians of the world, the universities, all the world, in order to help them redress the wrongs committed against them and allow them to return to their lands and property and live in peace and justice and equality in their property, in their homes in Palestine. This is very, very important for peace and stability in the Middle East.
Tell us about border encampments. What are they?
The Palestinian people, various sectors of Palestinian people, families with grandfathers, fathers, sons, daughters, wives from the Palestinian society in Rafah, in Gaza, in Khan Yunis, in many Palestinian villages and towns and refugee camps, march towards the border or the truce line imposed by the settler Zionist regime, and they go there and sit in these camps. They dance dabka, they sing, they chat, they eat, they demonstrate, they look at their towns and villages which they lost in 1948. Their lands from which they were driven by the force of arms in 1948 in order to breathe in the cold breeze and of their country, in order to see it, and in order to send a message, an outcry to the whole world that the Palestinian refugees cannot forget, I will never forget their right of return. Each and every Palestinian has a dream. Each and every Palestinian has a dream. The dream of return, the dream of living in peace with justice, not Pax Israelita, not Pax Americana, peace with justice and equality in their ancestral lands, in their homes from which they were driven out to the desert by the Zionist gangs at that time. So these are nonviolent, peaceful demonstrations modeled after Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, and all those great leaders who were demonstrating and marching for freedom in order to get their own rights. We are human beings like any other human beings. We want to live in honor and dignity. We cannot continue to live miserable lives, to be reduced to subhumans, to animals in such refugee camps, deprived of everything, under occupation, under hermetic medieval siege, with Israel killing every day, by the day, and they are committing massacres against us, with the whole world, unfortunately, giving us deaf ears, and with the United States of America giving unlimited support, protecting them in the United Nations by using the vetoes, and giving them the state-of-the-art arms in order to commit more massacres. Israel so far committed more than 40 massacres against the Palestinian people, and this is the evidence of Israelis such as Ilan Pape and other Israeli historians. This is why we cry to the whole world to do us justice, to treat us as human beings, to impose sanctions on Israel, to try the Israeli leaders as war criminals, to divest from Israel, and to use BDS, as they did with South Africa, in order to force Israel to allow us to return and to return to our lands, to live in honor and peace and dignity. We are ready to live with Jews, with the Christians, with Muslims, with all sorts of people in order to do our part to contribute toward welfare, civilization, progress, to live as human beings, because the Palestinian people are a dynamic people and we can contribute a lot if there is peace and security. However, if there is no peace or security for the Palestinians, there will be always peacelessness and insecurity in this part of the world, because we are quite determined. We have resolved to have our right of return, especially the United Nations adopted this resolution many times, and the world tried to put pressure on Israel, yet the Israelis ignored all these resolutions, and instead of implementing the resolution, they build more settlements, they bring more Jews, they pump out more Palestinians, they commit more massacres, they committed genocidal wars, and they use to ethnically cleanse the Palestinian people, they use the following strategy. One, genocide. They committed genocide against the Palestinian people, genocidal war. Then ethnocide. Then memory side, politicide, sociocide, herbicide. These kinds of crimes committed by the Israelis were reported by Israeli historians, and these actually are crimes against humanity, which must bring all Zionist warlords to the International Criminal Court to be tried for the massacres and the crimes which they have been committing against the Palestinian people ever since 1948. When the Palestinian people, when we go towards our borders, the Israelis are given orders to shoot to kill, shoot to maim, and to use maximum violence, even against the photographer. And the case of Yasser Murtaza is a clear case, when he was holding a camera with press mark on his back, yet they killed him simply because they don't want this image to be conveyed, to be transmitted to the whole world, in order to hide their crimes against the Palestinian people. So the Palestinian people continue these marches on and on until the siege is lifted and until our right of repatriation is implemented and until justice is done and we enjoy to live in honor, security, equality, justice in our own homes and the property and from which we were driven in 1948.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Assad Abu Shark, a spokesperson and member of the organizing committee of the protest known as the Great March of Return, which is happening inside Gaza now.
What are the conditions that the people, the Palestinian people, are being forced to live under in Gaza? I mean, I want people to understand, what are the conditions that people have to live in when they're living in Gaza?
Well, the best description of what's happening in Gaza is Eliot's description. Life in death and death in life. Gaza is a wasteland now, a land of waste. It's a life of misery and refugee camps. We are deprived of everything. We are dispossessed. There is not enough food. There is not enough drugs. There is, we cannot move. We are denied to travel because Gaza now is totally sieged. It suffers from a hermetic, medieval, strangulating siege. Students cannot, for example, leave their universities. Even professor, university professor cannot go, for example, for exchange, in any exchange program. Patients cannot find drugs. People die. There were hundreds or thousands of people died because of this siege. If we are talking about the rate of employment in the Gaza Strip, it is well over 70%. 70% electricity cuts. We have only 3 hours of electricity every day. Only 3 hours. Imagine to have 3 hours of electricity. Gaza is overcrowded. In Gaza, we are now around well over 2 million in an area which is no more than 365 square kilometers, which is the most crowded, overpopulated area in the world. There are social diseases. There are diseases, all sorts of diseases, from cancer onward. And we live in such, that is to say, misery, to the extent one can say this concentration camp, which is in total oblivion and nobody cares. Nobody comes to open, for example, the crossing points which have been closed for years now. Nobody comes to help the Palestinian people regain their own rights. The situation in Gaza, which is overcrowded, is miserable and miserable and miserable. It is dehumanizing, denigrating. The situation is miserable in the full sense of the word. It is, as I said, life in death and death in life.
It's extremely important that people understand this. And in the face of all this, in the face of actually robbing people of the right to life, I think it's important that people understand that the Palestinian people are being denied actually the right to live as human beings. And I want them to understand, too, that what happened when people heard about the call for these marches, for this great march of return and all the actions building up to that, what was the response of the people?
The response of the Palestinian people, all the Palestinian people, in refugee camps, in towns, in villages, in the countryside, wherever they might be, all of them, in thousands, hundreds of thousands, marched, participated to march towards the truce lines, taking their children, whether they are young people, university students, small children, school children, old people, very old people, women, men. All sectors of the Palestinian people moved, and this is why they pitched camps, white tents, along the border from Rafah to Beit Hanun, which is around 45 kilometers. This is the border, and they go there. They, as I said, they dance dabka, they eat, they listen to lectures, they demonstrate. They walk, they meet, they talk about their dream, because, as I said, every Palestinian has a dream. They cry now, I have a dream of return, the return to the land from which I was driven out, the land usurped, stolen by settler Zionists in 1948, and after that. So all the Palestinian people inside Palestine, even the Palestinians outside Palestine, they pray for us. They look with their own eyes towards the borders. They dream of the right of return, all the Palestinians. And this is why I think this march of return is going on and on and on. And I think all refugee camps, wherever they might be, if they are allowed the chance, whether in Egypt, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Jordan, in the West Bank, if they are allowed by the regimes, they will also organize marches and pitch tents to around their Palestine in order to send their message to the whole world. We are rid up of this life of misery. All we need, all we call for, is to see our right of repatriation implemented. And this is in accordance with the United Nations Resolution 194 and with the United Nations Resolution 3236, which calls for our right of return, our right to self-determination without external interference, our right to statehood, our right to independence, our right to sovereignty, that is to say, to live as human beings. That this life of dehumanization, this life of animalization will not continue, will not accept it, and this is why we hope our call will not fall in deaf ears and the whole people of the world will rise up to their responsibilities, put pressure on Israel, force Israel to withdraw from our land, to lift its siege, and to give us our own rights. And then we call upon the international community to bring those war criminals to accountability for the crimes against humanity which they committed against the Palestinian people.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Assad Abu Sharq, a spokesperson and member of the organizing committee of the protest known as the Great March of Return, which is happening inside Gaza now.
Now, the Zionist regime has said that the Palestinian actions happening now are terrorist gatherings hell-bent on violence. Their whole point is that they've responded to this, telling the world that the Palestinians have mounted a military attack against us and said, we're going to go all out with everything we have to attack them. What do you say to this when the Israeli authorities say, well, the Palestinian action is a terrorist gathering, and tell people what the actual military response that they've had has been?
The Israelis all the time keep lying and lying and lying. These are heaps of lies, naked lies against the Palestinian people. All we ask for is to implement UN resolutions. And these resolutions were adopted by the international community. There are many resolutions taken. Israel ignored. Israel, of course, being supported by the United States of America, protected by the United States of America, given the most important destructive weapons from F-15 to F-16 to whatever, in order to annihilate the Palestinian people, they committed massacres against the Palestinians. For example, there are many resolutions taken asking Israel to withdraw from our land. Israel, so far, instead of withdrawing, they build more settlements, they expand the border, they expand the settlements, they bring in more Jews, pump out more Palestinians, simply because the Zionist project is based on ethnic cleansing. The ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, and I just listed the strategy used by the Israelis against the Palestinian people, from genocidal wars to massacres to killing by the day and every day. And I'd like to remind you that one of the Israeli generals said, if we do not kill and overkill, we cannot remain to exist. And Begin once said, without the massacre of Deir Yassin, there couldn't have been the state of Israel. This is the statement of Sharon, Netanyahu, Lieberman, who gave order, shoot to kill, shoot to maim. Now, the whole world knows that the Palestinian people are refugees. They have resolutions. They have human rights. They are waiting for the international community to do them justice. Israel denies us our rights. Israel instead commits more massacres, and the Palestinians now, they demonstrate peacefully, non-violently. Yet, when we go there, we meet snipers, we meet soldiers who are armed to teeth, tanks, drones. There are now, as I am talking to you at this very particular moment, there are drones in the Gaza Strip. There are Israeli Air Force. Yeah, and since this morning, it doesn't stop. Every day, every minute, Israeli warplanes, Israeli drones are watching everything, and they are even sending their spies. They use their psychological warfare. They use all means in order of psychological war, of military weapon, in order to annihilate and wipe out the Palestinians, wipe them off from the map, because this is the strategy of settler Zionism, settler colonization, which is based on ethnically cleansing the Palestinian people, not only from the Gaza Strip, from Jerusalem, from the area occupied in 1948, from mandated Palestine, historic Palestine. Unfortunately, they are being supported by the various and many U.S. governments, from Truman to Trump, and Western governments, and now they are being supported by Trump administration, which thinks of giving them what they call the package or the deal of the century, which denies us our rights, and which gives them a Balfour model, the promise, like Balfour Declaration, in order to deny us all our rights and to perpetuate our misery and the occupation of our land.
Now, one of the things that the Israeli regime has said, and it's actually when you look at the Israel's response to the demonstrations and to all the actions that have been called in opposition to the terrible suppression and repression and attacks on the Palestinian people over many, many decades, their response to all these various actions that were called, they talked then, and this is a quote from an Israeli military official. He said, "Yesterday, we saw 30,000 people. We arrived and with precise reinforcements, nothing was carried out uncontrolled." And they're talking about on their part, everything was accurate and measured, and we know where every bullet landed. So in other words, they actually went in there with the idea that they were going to shoot people down all over the place. This is the response to the Palestinian demonstrations and their demand for their land back. What do you have to say to that?
Look, this is a silly joke on their part. This is sort of April Fool. You see, the Palestinian people go there, innocent civilians. All they do is peaceful demonstration, non-violent demonstration, no arms whatsoever. Nobody allows any odd person to go down there. The Israelis try to fabricate stories, to create excuses in order to torpedo this demonstration, this right of return, in order to tell the whole world, to give them the false story. This has always been the false narrative given to the whole world by the Israelis in order to make the whole world hate the Palestinians and sympathize with them. The journalists who come here are witness to what is happening, and they see that the Palestinians go there unarmed, with naked chest, just children, old men, women, and people from all walks of life go there in order just to have a look, to send a message to the whole world, to send an outcry that we want the whole world not to forget us. We need the whole world to help us. We need the whole world to implement the resolutions taken by the United Nations. There are many resolutions which calls for our right of return, our right of repatriation. Israel concocts these stories in order to commit more massacres. Well, this is part of the ethnic cleansing strategy used in order to drive the Palestinians out, to make more refugees, and to bring in and pump in more Jews, simply because every day they build settlements, especially in the West Bank and especially in Jerusalem, and they bring Jews from America to Ethiopia, to Africa, to Latin America, in order to increase their number, to make Israel a great country, because they need more people to enroll in the army in order to kill and kill and kill. As I told you, the Israeli advisor, Dov Vasiglav, and another Israeli advisor who was the advisor on demography for Sharon, said kill and kill and overkill, because this is how we keep Israel And this is how can Israel remain to exist. Without killing the Palestinians, we cannot remain to exist. This is their strategy, and this is their quote. And I remind you even from Herzl. Herzl, the pioneer of Zionism, said, we want to establish in Palestine a state for Jews, all Jews and only Jews. And when he was asked about the Palestinians, he said, we will spread them across the borders. End of quote. Ben Gurion said, there is no immoral thing in the transfer of the Palestinian people across the border. So that is to say, the Zionist movement, the racist Zionist movement, and henceforth apartheid Israel, which is modeled after South Africa, is bent on the annihilation, extermination of the Palestinian people in order to create a greater Israel, which the Israeli flag symbolizes. Two blue lines with the star, which means from Euphrates to the Nile, the land of Israel must be expanded and extended.
All right, one last question, Assad. It's been said that the action of all the protests that are leading up to this will culminate with a great march of return on May 15th, which is, as you've said, the anniversary of the theft of the Palestinian homeland, the Nakba, or the catastrophe, and the establishment of the settler state of Israel as an outpost of U.S. imperialism. What is this going to look like in the last day of this campaign? What can people expect to see?
Remember, the 15th of May, 1948, and the 19th of May every year marks the Palestinian Nakba, the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people by the Zionist regime. And this is why the Palestinians, wherever they might be, and we are trying now here, and there are contacts with the Palestinians everywhere, whether in the West Bank, in Lebanon, in Jordan, around Palestine, in order to demonstrate non-violently and peacefully towards the border, towards the border of Palestine, all the Palestinians in unison under the Palestinian flag to tell the whole world that we will return. Our right of return is individual, is collective, is legal, is legitimate, is inalienable, as stated by the United Nations, and it is our right of return is our right of return. And we want to tell the whole world that the whole Palestinian people, wherever they might be, are dreaming of this right of return. We want to tell the whole world there can never ever be peace or stability in the Middle East as long as we remain refugees, homeless, displaced, we remain in this wilderness, living in miserable conditions while Israel brings in, bumps in more Jews to take more lands, to enjoy life in our lands, and to dehumanize us and to make us live in such miserable, dehumanizing concentration camps. Now, this is going to be the climax. However, these marches will continue and continue and continue until we obtain and attain our right of return as stipulated by UN resolutions and the human rights resolutions and by the international humanitarian law and supported by the all peace-loving people, all freedom-loving people throughout the world. And this is why we have a particular cry and a call upon our American friends, American people, to put pressure on Trump, on Congress, to put pressure on their government in order to do us justice.
All right, Assad, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and welcome anytime.
All right, welcome back. That was an interview done with Dr. Assad Abu Sharq the other night. It was direct from Gaza, and it was in the midst of some very, very difficult circumstances, all right? And the interview, as I said, was done under very difficult conditions, and it's one that's important for people to hear.
We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
Joining us right now, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show, welcome back to the show, Ann Wright. And Ann is a retired U.S. Army colonel and a former U.S. diplomat who resigned from the U.S. government in 2003 in opposition to the war in Iraq. She's a deeply committed peace activist, and she became active in Palestinian solidarity issues after visiting Gaza in 2009, after the 27-day Israeli war on Gaza. Ann has sailed on three of the more than two dozen Gaza flotillas, including the most recent 2016 women's boat carrying humanitarian aid and construction materials to challenge Israel's blockade of Gaza. And Ann's going to talk with us right now about what's going on with the new Gaza flotilla scheduled for sometime this summer. Ann, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, I always look forward to talking with you around these things. And we're going to keep in touch as this goes through all through the summer. So let's plan on it, all right? Good.
Yeah.
Well, let's give people an idea of what is the Freedom Flotilla Coalition and the upcoming 2018 Gaza flotilla.
Well, we are going to have a flotilla. Last year we had two boats. One of them just didn't work as we were taking off from Spain. So we ended up with one boat, the women's boat to Gaza. This time we'll have four. And two of them will be coming. They are starting out in Scandinavia because part of this is to have educational events all the way to get to Gaza, all through Europe, so that we can continue to talk to people about the horrific, horrific conditions in Gaza and mobilize support for Palestinians. You know, by the year 2020, only 2 years from now, the World Health Organization says that Gaza will become uninhabitable because of the lack of water, the lack of electricity, the sewage problems that are going on there. You know, the blockade of Gaza has just been horrific for those people, those 2 million people in there. So we sail to educate people about what's happening and to let the Palestinians in Gaza know that we're not forgetting them, that we are going to sail boats and hopefully we'll be able to get in there.
Now, this year it looks like you're planning on actually a bigger kind of reaching out that goes like stretches a lot of different ways with people approaching Gaza and the whole aim of the thing coming from many different directions, coming from the south, from the north, and even one grouping of boats that are going up rivers through Europe and then coming out and meeting up with people around off of the Gaza shore. Can we talk about that a little bit, the involvement of all these different people in this?
Sure. We hope to have four boats. That's what we're planning on. And two of them will come down the waterways from Scandinavia, going through Central Europe, through the waterways, rivers, canals. They're shallow draft boats, as one would expect. But that really gives us a great opportunity to reach more people that live along the waters, the rivers and canals. And then we'll have two boats that'll be going on the outside of Europe, going in the Atlantic Ocean, and then making port visits on Atlantic ports in Belgium, the Netherlands, France, Portugal, Spain, and then coming on in to the Mediterranean, where the two boats will meet up eventually and then head for Gaza.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you, when you started out, you were talking about the horrendous conditions in Gaza for the people there. Can you give people a sense of that? Because I found that a lot of people, you know, if they know about Gaza, they know about from what they see on the news, but they don't really have a sense of what is going on in Gaza and where Gaza actually is. I mean, when you're looking at it, it is something that where, as you pointed out, it's possible that actually it'd be uninhabitable in less than 2 years. But there's actually a series of conditions that people in Gaza are trying to live through. And I think people need to know what some of that is.
Yes, since 2007, now 11 years ago, the Israelis have really put a blockade, a land and sea blockade around Gaza. It's only 20 miles long and 5 miles wide. The southern border abuts Egypt, but the other three borders are totally controlled by the state of Israel as an occupying power. So they're the ones that have the authority to stop anything coming in there, to include food. In fact, several years ago, one of their ministers of health was quoted as saying, "We've put the people of Gaza on a diet. We're only letting in a certain number of caloric quantities for each person, and we're lowering those quantities." Right now, less than 4 hours of electricity are coming in per day. The Israelis control all of the electricity that comes into Gaza. It controls all of the water. It controls all of the telephones. It has Gaza in a squeeze. And on the naval side, the ocean side, the Mediterranean side, where there is a port in Gaza City, and 40 years ago, they were able to export products and import products. But for the past 40 years, the Israelis have refused to allow international boats to come in, although in 2008, there were two little boats that came in carrying 44 internationals and then taking out some Palestinians that needed health care and needed some students that had scholarships that couldn't get out, and so they brought them out. But really, since late 2008, there have been no international ships that have been allowed to get in. And in fact, the Israeli Navy is very brutal in stopping these boats. If you remember in 2010, they stopped our six boats. I was on one of them. The Mavi Marmara, though, is the one where they used lethal force and killed nine people, executed them, unarmed civilians on a ship in international waters, and they executed nine people, and another person was subsequently died from his injuries from these bullets. They wounded over 50 more on the Mavi Marmara. Every one of our boats, to include two cargo ships, were boarded forcefully. People were tasered. They were beaten up, windows blown out with percussion grenades. And then we were all taken against our will, arrested, taken against our will, to a country we didn't want to go to, Israel, put in prison, then deported with a 10-year deportation so that we cannot go into Israel, therefore we can't go into the West Bank. They keep the boats. They steal the boats. I mean, this is larceny on the high seas. It's piracy, what they've been doing. We sail to bring attention to what's happening in Gaza, though. That's our purpose. We don't want people to forget they're living in an open-air prison.
And that's one of the actual important differences between what's going on this year and what has been going on in the past, I think. It's in terms of the theme of this thing. Let's talk about this theme a little bit more, because it's not so much you're trying to get into Israel. It's not so much you're trying to get into Gaza, but you're actually making a statement with the boats and the way that they're coming in. And what they're highlighting is the life or the killing of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Oh, that's right. And can you imagine living in this tiny little place? It's one of the most densely populated places in the world. 2 million people live in this tiny, tiny little area. They have no real control over their lives. Israel can turn off all the electricity anytime they want to. They have 24-hour-a-day drones over Gaza. Anytime they want to, they can push a button and blow up a car that they say, well, there was somebody in there that was going to threaten the state of Israel. But when you really look at it, the numbers of innocent people that are killed in all of these attacks are horrendous. And now, right now, with the third day, the third Friday of the Grand Return March, where Palestinians nonviolently are approaching a fence that is set off by 1,000 feet of their own territory, which the Israelis have claimed is the buffer zone. But it's Palestinian territory that should be agricultural products be coming from there. But as Israel has said, if you come in here, we'll shoot you. Rather than putting a border on theirs, use their own land if they want to have a border area. But no, they put a free fire zone, a kill on site, and they have remote controlled machine guns that are set up so that they can cover all of that territory. And by remote control, and in fact, a couple of years ago, it was a woman's military unit that were the machine gun killers. And they sit in air-conditioned rooms and watch videos of the area, just kind of like a drone pilot. And then when they see someone, and they can do facial recognition, they know every single person there is in Gaza. because they know every building. They know every telephone there because it's an Israeli telephone exchange. And so they just kill at will. And it's a horrific situation. Half the kids in Gaza, and the statistics are half the kids in Gaza are having emotional problems with this. I would say it'd probably be like 95% of the kids in Gaza because of the horrific oppression that every single day you don't know whether your house is going to be blown up or if you have a car, it's going to be blown up or what's going to happen because you hear these assassin drones above you. I've been there several times, like 8 times, and you hear this, and you may not even be able to see it up above you, but you can hear this thing, and then all of a sudden a flash and a hellfire rocket comes down and blows up a building.
You know, tell me something, Ann. There's a point in here that, you know, when I'm listening to you, it really does emphasize this thing of there's actually a genocidal thing going on, it seems, against the Palestinian people that is very, very real in the sense that, you know, look, Israel is not, they're not saying, you know, they're just banning people from coming in, they're doing this. They're actually actively going on. And you look at what's happening now in Gaza and the way that people are just being wantonly killed. I mean, someone was telling me this morning, right before we went on the air, that there was actually one person was killed and over 500 wounded just today. And if you think about this in terms of what's been happening in relation to the struggle of the people in Gaza to demand their humanity, and as our first guest was talking about, that it really is a question of seizing the fact that you are human, that the Palestinian people are human, and demanding that the world recognize that. It seems like that has to be a big part of what is motivating folks, or is that a big part of what's motivating folks like yourself to go to Gaza on this ship?
Indeed it is, and in fact, our campaigns have over the years, several of them have been named Stay Human. You know, stay human. You stay human as an international saying, I see what's happening and my humanity says I have to speak out. I have to do something to bring world attention to what's happening to the Palestinians. And for the Palestinians to be nonviolent in face of the violence of them. Of course, there are some militant groups that have fired rockets into Israel. That's for sure. But when you look at the massive, massive disparity of what Israel has as military forces used against essentially an unarmed civilian population that they kill at will and are trying, as your earlier speaker said, trying to get the conditions so bad that people will be forced to leave because they cannot have any clean water, they can't have clean air. There's the concentration of fecal material in the air in Gaza is one of the highest in the world because the sewage plant is always the first plant, the first facility that Israel goes after and blows up. Mm-hmm. And then they won't let spare parts come in to get it fixed. So raw sewage is in everywhere, and it dries, and then fecal material is in the air. And then the waters where fishermen, to try to get some protein for the people of Gaza, The fishermen are forced to stay within, it will vary from 3 to 5 miles offshore, having to fish in this polluted water because the Israelis have boats out there that will blow them up, kill the fishermen if they come out any further to try to get in cleaner water. Mm-hmm. It is a horrific, nasty, terrible situation that the Israeli government is really conducting slow genocide on the people of Gaza.
Exactly. I was going to actually emphasize that. It is a slow genocide. And we're running up against our time, but I want to, real quick, can you tell people how they can get involved now, tentative dates, things like that, but mainly in a couple of minutes, how can they get involved now?
Surely. Well, the boats will sail from mid-May and then be coming through Europe all through May. If you go online, and we have a Facebook 2018 Gaza Freedom Flotilla U.S. section. We've got information there. Or if you go on Nation Builder 2018 Gaza Flotilla, we've got lots of information there. So the ability of people to make monetary contributions is great. Writing about what you feel about Gaza is important. And if you happen to be in Europe anytime during the summer and want to help out and be on a ground crew and possibly even on one of the legs of this massive voyage, get in touch with us through our Nation Builder, and we'll talk to you about perhaps helping us out in Europe.
All right, Ann, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and let's stay in touch because I definitely want to follow this with you.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, take care now. All right, and you can follow Ann on Twitter at AnnWright46, all right? At AnnWright46. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. All right, we got just a few minutes, and there's something I really felt just compelled to actually bring to you this time. This is a piece from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and it's from taken from his speech, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go, the film, actually, from the Trump-Pence Regime Must Go, In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America, A Better World is Possible. And this is a clip that talks about why is it that the Democrats, and you hear this especially a lot today, the Democrats can only try to resolve this on the terms of the system itself, all right? So check this out, and we'll be right back.
Why is it that the Democrats can only try to resolve this on the terms of the system, and for that reason cannot offer any alternative that is in our interest, in the interests of humanity? Why are they determined to keep things within the established norms and acceptable limits? We can turn to the words of Barack Obama, shortly after Trump won the Electoral College vote. We, Democrats and Republicans, are on the same team, Obama insisted. And he made a point of saying that we should wish Trump well and help him succeed because his success is success for all of us. Well, we can say that here Obama was telling an important truth. Ultimately and fundamentally, they are all on the same team, which explains why the Democratic Party will only oppose what the Trump-Pence regime is doing within narrow limits and always in the interests of the team of which they are all a part. And really? We should all help Trump succeed with his fascist agenda because a successful fascism will be good for all of us? Only with the perverted logic of the system all these politicians serve, and with the poisonous outlook of American chauvinism, could anyone put forward such a position? Like the Republicans, the Democrats believe in the superiority of the capitalist system of exploitation and the exceptional greatness of America and its empire. They champion a brave new world of 21st century globalization, which rests on a vast network of sweatshops where people, including children, slave long hours for near-starvation wages. They firmly believe in the right of America to dominate the world and to overturn governments, bomb countries, and slaughter people to do so. But they say it should be done with the cooperation of allies and in the name of making the world more free, orderly, and peaceful. They will talk about diversity and inclusiveness while actually acting to maintain the fundamental relations of inequality and oppression that are hallmarks of this country, because those relations are built into this system, and it could not exist or function without them. In short, even with their real differences with the Republicans, they represent and serve the same system, the systems whose normal workings have now brought fascists to power.
All right, that was Bob Avakian, and that was taken from a film that he made, and the name of the film is "The Trump Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. A Better World Is Possible." And sisters and brothers, I wanted to play that because so many people get tied up in looking at, especially when you're looking at what the fascists, the Nazis that are in power right now, and what they're doing and where they're going and what's happening in the world. And a lot of people get tied up and confused sometimes, but mainly don't see that going to the Democrats is a very dangerous thing. And it's not different. It's not putting a different class of people in power. It's actually, and if you look at the Democrats and the way that they're locking on to everything, is there any opposition to what the Republicans are doing these days, to what the Nazis are doing these days? Not really. But if you want to stand up and fight against this, if you're driven to say, no, we are not going to be part of the genocide that's being unleashed on the planet, then you need to listen to this. You need to watch this whole film, all right? And you can do that by going to revcom.us. That's right. The whole film is available at revcom.us. And it is something that is extremely important for people to get into. Get into it. Write to me with your thoughts about it. Anything else? It's incredible, all right? And you should check out the fact that this is something that everybody should be checking out. There's a launch video of a new call from Refuse Fascism, a new call that's linked on my Facebook, all right? You can go to the launch of a new call from Refuse Fascism, and it's calling on people to get out into the streets, sisters and brothers, and look, if we don't fight this, no Democrat, nobody else is going to actually stand up and do that. You can also access this at refusefascism.org. So make sure you check out the piece by Bob Avakian, and you can get that at revcom.us, and check out what's going on at refusefascism.org. All right? All right, I want to thank everyone that helped with the show today, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my board offer today, Teddy Robinson, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Jasiri X and Checkpoint.
Times, tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children, grown adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint. And pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream of the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream of the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Gumming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tear at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at a checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is the law at the checkpoint. Criminal.